choices, new players, new models of care. You know consumer-first healthcare is everywhere. For us to build the future, to see what's new, we gotta look at the world from a different point of view. Consumer innovation ain't going away. I say it's here to stay. Today it leads the way. We gotta drop the silos. We're all the same team. Experience, business, tech, and marketing. So join us now. Join the revolution. Consumer first health is the evolution. Status quo or like status no. Yeah, this is the healthcare rap. Yo, come on, let's go.
Hey, welcome back to the leading podcast about consumer health innovations. I'm Jared Johnson, and here's what's going to go down today. We have the flavor of the week about the third and final trend in McKinsey's latest Consumer Insights report. Are consumers still shopping their healthcare? And how can we orchestrate experiences by connecting to a holistic health ecosystem? I'll talk about that. Then we have a dynamic conversation with Jenny Bristow, CEO and founder of Hedy & Hop. Jenny speaks with a lot of healthcare organizations about the intersection of marketing, digital, and consumer engagement. So as we champion leaders in this field, it's more important than ever to seek out inspiration and education. You'll love Jenny's enthusiasm and passion for working in this field and her insights on what's coming around the corner for consumer experience, as well as how sharing our own healthcare encounters leads us to build a better system for tomorrow. It's time to dive right in. Are you ready? Let's go.
Flavor of the week.
Health systems finally have clearer direction on how to orchestrate experiences for consumers who, despite wishful thinking to the contrary, are still actively shopping their healthcare. For the last two episodes, I've been focusing on McKinsey's latest Consumer Insights report covering three macro trends related to consumer healthcare behaviors. So today, let's dig right into trend number three. Consumers are actively shopping and making trade-offs. The report explains that in the face of economic uncertainty, consumers have continued their shopping behavior, that is, researching before making purchases, and they're frequently trading down to the more affordable option. This trend is affecting many industries, including healthcare. 45% of surveyed consumers report researching providers and in-network costs before choosing a health insurance plan. Based on data from the last two McKinsey Consumer Health Insights surveys, 44% of healthcare consumers research providers before making an appointment. On average, consumers who research providers then look at two or three providers before making a decision. This represents a meaningful increase in shopping behaviors compared to the 2017 survey, when only 20 to 30% of healthcare consumers conducted similar research. According to data from the 2023 McKinsey Consumer Health Insights Survey and McKinsey analysis of internal data from ZocDoc, consumers typically take five factors into account when shopping for healthcare: quality, availability, proximity, cost, and options for care. We've talked a lot on this show about how modern consumer behaviors aren't just based on having choices, but on having expectations as well. And don't get me wrong, it's easy to get caught up in the jargon of consumerism, right? Just look at the comments on most consumer health-related threads on LinkedIn these days, where people are trying to make points that we don't always have choices. But I do think it's good to see recent research continue to validate that the basic tenets of consumer choice and expectations continue to impact their experience. And that's what all three trends in this report lead to, in my opinion: experience orchestration. And while the report doesn't use that term exactly, it does say that healthcare organizations could respond to this trend by facilitating decision-making for consumers, including with fast, convenient navigation of their systems that belies the vast complexity underneath, and by enabling consumers to easily connect to the offerings they need when they need them. And here's the part that really hit home for me. It said, finally, by seamlessly linking consumers to strategic partners across the holistic health ecosystem, ranging from medical devices to fitness and wellness classes to over-the-counter products. That's how organizations can better support the needs of consumers. It's a bit mind-blowing, isn't it? The thought of linking consumers to strategic partners throughout an ecosystem sets a new vision for how to address their shopping behaviors. So maybe we haven't been thinking broadly enough until now. Maybe orchestrating experiences is more about an emphasis on building those seamless connections with strategic partners rather than simply funneling patients through a narrow set of legacy services. As with the first two trends in McKinsey's report, I think we're just beginning to scratch the surface here. Let's reframe the opportunity to provide consumer-centric healthcare by examining it through the lens of experience orchestration and start considering how to link consumers to an ecosystem that extends what's possible for their health and well-being. That's another way that we'll build the healthcare of tomorrow, and that's the flavor of the week.
The flow.
All right, friends, let's get into the flow. Please join me in what's sure to be an exciting and energetic episode. I'm here with Jenny Bristow. Jenny, welcome. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm awesome. Happy to be here today, Jared.
Every conversation, and I mean this, every conversation we have had has made me feel happier. I know that's by design. That's just who you are. But I genuinely mean that. So I'm looking forward to sharing that with our listeners here. Let's start with who you are, what you do. We'll get into a little bit more about, you know, some experiences you've had and what you're hearing from clients. But let's start there.
Perfect. So I'm the CEO and owner of a healthcare marketing agency called Heady and Hop. So we are 100% healthcare. We really specialize in patient acquisition and physician marketing campaigns in the provider and the payer space. Then we also work with folks trying to drive innovation in those spaces. We have been around for, it's coming up on 9 years. And before this, I actually started out in the healthcare recruiting industry right out of college. And I've been in digital marketing my entire career. This is the second agency I've owned. I owned one out in Seattle, worked at Amazon for some time. So very, very big fan of continuing to grow, learn new skills, and just kind of keeping up with the innovation that makes these jobs harder.
Also a fan of the background you've got here for our listeners. They won't be able to see, but you got to describe the neon sign on the side behind you.
I'm on Zoom all day long, like most of us, right? And so whenever COVID happened, we decided to begin working from home exclusively. I moved into my sunroom. So it's beautiful, lots of windows. But an Instagram ad hit me up, taking my company name in bright pink. And so I have it up against a dark blue wall, and it's in every single Zoom that I do. So again, trying to just infuse a little bit of joy in the conversations we have, even if it's visual.
It's so refreshing to have it in contrast to, I'm trying to think of the last, even a virtual background that wasn't like just a little dreary or a little, I don't know, sterile. So this is a different vibe going on. So
Thank you. I call it bohemian eclectic.
I see that. I totally see that. Okay. So we'll have to share some screenshots and stuff and video clip on this one for sure. So people see what we mean. Is absolutely, it's a 100. You're already getting a 100 here. So
thank you. Ace
right.
Test.
That's right.
Love gold stars.
So we're going to try something a little different here. There are a few different directions. It's almost like a choose your own adventure. There's a few different directions we could go today, but I do think a good starting point is just leveraging kind of what you're hearing on a few different topics. And I'll set this up a little bit, right? Listeners of our podcast here know we like to talk about what it takes to innovate on behalf of consumers. In this context, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's a patient who is making a choice about how to pay for their care. That's one aspect of it, but it's the fact that we are human beings who aren't always thinking about healthcare. We're thinking about how we want to feel. We're thinking about how we want to have health and wellness. We want to feel good in our lives. And so there's a difference there. This wording is intentional, right? So there is an aspect or a focus that needs to happen on consumer experience. We need to make it easier to get there. We need to make it easier to use the tools that we have, many of which are digital now. And then we also need to understand not only what we have to do to get there, but who has to do it. And so I want to focus on the marketing leader today who is involved in so many aspects of making healthcare easier for people, usually with digital means. That's a lot of implementation. It's a lot of evaluation. It's a lot of creative. There are so many different aspects to this. But it ultimately involves a marketer in a marketing role who may or may not have been in a marketing role thinking they were going to work on things like, oh, good, you know, now I get to figure out some privacy issues. Now I get to figure out consent. Now I get to figure out what's coming with AI. You know, now I get to be a technologist. I would like to think some have, but for plenty of marketers, that wasn't part of why they came into marketing. So tell me about the digital hats that marketers are wearing these days from what you see.
Just a little bit of like perspective foundation laying. We work with providers as small as a single location children's hospital all the way up to multi-state healthcare systems, right? So across the spectrum. So we've seen organizations where the marketing leaders perhaps managing a team of four all the way up to where they have a team of 40. Underneath them. So first of all, you have that dichotomy. You have budget implications. You have team size implications. That, of course, is true regardless of what sector you're in, right? But that is still something that you have to take into consideration. The interesting thing that I have seen across the different sizes within this spectrum is most of the senior level marketing folks actually have a background in comms or PR. Very few of them have a performance marketing background. And when I say performance marketing, that's truly having that digital and technical acumen where you can hop in and operationally stand up a landing page, build out an email campaign, understand consent management tools and how they integrate with your CDP, all of these different technical considerations. It is very rare that the most senior person in the marketing seat of an organization will actually have this background. I actually had a really interesting conversation just earlier this week with one of my clients, and it was a mid-size healthcare provider. I was talking to the president of the organization, and he wanted my advice and insight because they're trying to fill the CMO role. And he said, you know, Jenny, I'm just getting super frustrated because we have marketing and communications as the way we define the role. He goes, and I feel like at this point, that's a unicorn. Either you're going to have somebody with lots of marketing experience or lots of communications and PR experience. And he can't find anybody that walks that balance in the middle of line. And I think that is pretty true in what we've seen as far as what the person's background is. It's very difficult to actually have experience doing all of those things. So we have seen a few different ways that people have tried to fix this. Sometimes it's building a team of specialists underneath you that have multiple years of experience in privacy, in analytics, in paid media management, whatever it is, partnering with outside organizations, such as an agency like myself, where we bring that technical expertise to the table. But I think the most successful leaders really are honest about what they do and don't know and are transparent about it to their partners or employees. That way they're able to lean in effectively versus masking it and pretend like they understand all of the things. That's where you typically get into problems.
I've seen that too, for sure. And I can remember the early days of building out a marketing technology and analytics team. I believe that's what we called it, which wasn't a function. Right? Early on.
Right.
And yes, to your point of a marcom centered person, the strategic chops that somebody's got to be in a leadership position there are off the charts. And a lot of times, you know, it's definitely been an evolution. I definitely see a lot more technical capacity as part of that now. And sometimes those things do clash. So being able to feel like you're a leader and competent and communicate that to your team, like, look, we know what we're doing. Yeah, we're bringing on that. You know, we're evaluating this platform, whatever it is. Fill in the gap of any type of acronym here. CRM, CMS, CDP. You know, whatever you need, whatever type of platform it is. Any all the way down to all the point solutions involved that are attached to the main enterprise solutions. Yeah, there's so much there. So I think there's always been an aspect of continual learning, of being able to recognize that I haven't used this type of platform before, but I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to evaluate it. And I'm going to evaluate it within the context of not just how comfortable am I with it, like how comfortable am I training a team, building out those capabilities so that people feel comfortable. No one wants to feel dumb with this new shiny tech on the team saying, you get to figure this out. And that doesn't help anyone to make them feel that way either. I don't think. So, you know, part of this is an internal communication challenge of being aware of how you can make people feel with all this new tech coming on board.
I think it's internal communication, but I also think it's accountability. So one of the things that works really well, and we actually do this internally at Heady and Hop, because a lot of the programs coming in, maybe they have like a sprinkle of privacy we have to pay attention to, or a sprinkle of whatever, is really understanding who within your team owns that function. So for example, privacy, having one person on your team that owns it and they are the subject matter expert. And so they are responsible for making sure that everything that comes out of your team's production line is compliant from a privacy lens. And so that ensures that that leader doesn't have to really become a subject matter expert on all the individual things, because it's literally impossible. But they have a person on their team that they trust and empower to become that expert. And then they make sure they're weaved into the different parts of the program as needed, so they're able to execute appropriately.
Ooh, yeah. Okay. So yeah, we could go down that accountability route additionally, because that just compounds when it's not like we're removing pieces from the tech stack. We're just adding, we are just com-
We're piling on.
So you just keep adding, like, don't forget that thing we have been using for 20 years. Don't forget this thing that's only been here for a few years. And now you better learn the new one.
Exactly.
It's not going anywhere. We're not sunsetting things. We're just adding. So that does add so much tech fatigue that even I feel like those who are the most tech adept and willing to learn at some point are just kind of like, you know what? There's only so many of these we can do. And so what you just talked about, that accountability of, sure, I'm going to be the one going deep on this one aspect. I'm going to learn, whatever it is. I'm going to learn how to use our analytics tools. You know, I'm going to learn our data visualization tool, whatever it is. I'm going to learn that thing. You have to go in with this kind of dual mindset of, I'm going to learn it really well. And then I'm going to spend just as much time conveying the things I learned. Not everyone else wants to learn how to use it, but they want to learn what you learned. They want to learn the insights that you got. And so you have to go into it being very mindful of that, or else all the cultural things can happen of, well, someone says they're deep on that. The trust factor just starts to break down a little bit.
I completely agree. I think the other thing it helps with is, let's say somebody leaves your organization, which always happens, turnover happens, right? If you have an accountability chart that understands exactly what they were a SME in, gosh, it's easier to backfill, right? Whereas if somebody leaves, or let's say two people leave in a 6-month sprint, then all of a sudden you don't realize you no longer have a privacy expert on your team and things start backsliding and you're no longer compliant with your marketing. It just really helps prevent those blind spots.
Absolutely. I've experienced that. I feel like on both sides mm-hmm. of that. And
just
about anyone listening who's spent any time in marketing can relate. It's helpful when we put this in context of the efforts that are going on with consumer transformation. I started using the term consumer innovation over the last few months because I think transformation is just scary. And it's also too ethereal. It's what needs to happen. We do need to approach things fundamentally different, and some foundational aspects of healthcare experiences need to be completely changed, redesigned, reimagined to a different place. So that does need to take place. But what's going to get us there? It's understanding some of the consumer muscles we can build along the way. So as we refer to things like that, it's like, what process do we need to add in to see how many clicks somebody is putting in there to get them to where we want to go? How easy did we make that? We assume a lot that mm-hmm. we build the landing page, to your point. We set up this campaign. We're putting things out there. We're running ads. And just because it's running, that somebody's going to click through and go through the way we expect them. And that's often not the case. So there has to be a design and an experience design aspect of even a lot of the bread and butter marketing aspects that we're running. So that's another hat a marketer gets to wear.
Exactly. And then let alone the, measurement strategy, reporting and analysis also is another one, right? Just within that one campaign example that you shared. So I think it's also interesting. One thing that I was chatting with another client earlier this week is, they go, I have one medical, the Amazon offering. They were like, I have it. And I work for this provider. But it's so easy that I choose to have it. Like, how as marketers do we compete with that, with this monolithic, budgetless organization who, by the way, is known for strategically undercutting from a pricing perspective, where it is literally impossible for other people in that space to even break even, let alone have a profit remaining. I mean, I worked there and saw the inner workings about how ruthless they were. So when we think about how sophisticated our campaigns have to be, we no longer can just look at the competitive set about who geographically our patients could be visiting instead of us. You have to be thinking about the telehealth offerings and the huge budgets and consumer experience prioritization that those organizations have put into place. So it's a really tall hill to climb and really difficult for folks to be able to even understand. Like, I was chatting earlier this week, one of our clients wanted us to do a competitive set to help them understand, going into 2025, like, what should they be focusing on from like a campaign optimization perspective, content strategy, service line prioritization, what are their competitors doing? And we had to give them a little bit of bad news of like, hey, your competitors aren't who you think they are anymore. Like, the list you gave us, cute, that is still there, but there's also all these other competitors now that you need to have in your sights because they are taking market share from you. And so even that sort of realization can change the way that you approach strategic planning and then the specific, implementations and the technologies you want to put in place to make consumers make their lives easier to come and see you.
So true. That brought up a couple of examples here for me. And I actually happen to have this open right here. Let me just throw out a couple of those non-traditional provider organizations. You mentioned One Medical, right? There are others that the marketing from these non-traditional players tells a different story, and it offers a totally different value proposition. They directly address the pain points of seeing a traditional provider, and some more very directly than others. So these are like directly from their websites. It's not like they're hiding this at all. This is straight out there. So
it's a value proposition they lean on.
It is.
They're the messaging
they're like,
pillar,
this isn't
right?
even that
like,
hard.
That's
right.
Why you want to work with them. Mm-hmm.
Like everyone has experienced this. Everyone has their story of like, that wasn't easy. That was a terrible experience. So you've got Oak Street. Mm-hmm. Oak Street Health out there says there's three things. Doctors who actually listen. You don't have to lift a finger more than a doctor's office. There's a group called NICE. Their headline on their website is How Healthcare Should Be. There's Forward Clinic, you know, the ones who built the space age looking pods. But before that, you know, they still have these clinics. There's this finally a doctor dedicated to your long-term health. These just go on and on and on. And they focus on, we're actually doing the things that you expect from your provider, but we're actually doing them. And they're pretty aggressive. Some of those are really aggressive. And you're right, that plays into that whole thought of your competitors are not who you thought they were. So yeah, there's a strategic hat we get to wear there that has to keep evolving as well. I love it. I think it's a recognition that, you know, for those who haven't sat in that spot, been in the trenches in a direct marketing position, at the very least, you can recognize what this involves these days. And I do think that leads us to, you know, like what comes next for a lot of marketing. We've had a few episodes recently in our Future of Marketing series. And in each of them, we've gotten to the point where we're trying to understand, like, what are those skills that maybe are out there a little bit, but we probably need to spend more time building. We've referred to building consumer muscles, and that is everything from the strategic side to understanding what the tech architecture looks like to actually build a consumer-centered innovation of any kind. What comes to mind when we talk about like what's next in marketing for healthcare organizations?
The two things that I see people talking a lot about right now, I personally think it isn't the most important things we should be talking about, but everybody's talking about the cookie-less future and AI, right? Those are the two things that when you look at healthcare conferences, marketing conferences over the next year, those are topics that people are leaning on really heavily. It didn't show up as aggressively as I thought it would last year because the patient privacy and HIPAA changes were still so front of mind. Nobody thought like implemented a solve yet. So this year I see it talking about a lot more. And I just want to like really quickly provide my POV on those two things because I don't think they're as big of a deal as a lot of people are. I think people are using them as scare tactics. So first of all, if you're a healthcare marketer and you're listening to this and you're worrying about a cookie-less future, if you've implemented a patient privacy analytics program where you're HIPAA compliant, that's not going to bother you anyway. You're not doing retargeting. You're not doing any of the things that cookies really rely on anyway. First-party cookies aren't going away. That's how the internet works. You don't do programmatic. Like all of these different platforms that rely heavily on third-party cookies in order to function aren't going to bother you. Most of the patient privacy analytics implementations, whether it's, you know, ones that my team offers at Hedy and Hop, or if you've gone with FreshPaint or whatever, like cookies aren't a big thing right now. So other industries are really going to be impacted by that. Healthcare, not so much. So go ahead and like take that hat of worry off of you because it's not going to impact you very much. The other thing for AI, friends, there are so many privacy implications related with AI that the only way short term you're going to be able to effectively implement AI is within your internal organization with upstream research, creative variation development, something where you're not actually feeding in anything specific to your organization. So again, can it provide more efficiencies? Can it maybe speed up processes? Absolutely. But unless you're signing a BAA with an organization, it's a bigger tech stack implementation. Right? Which then it's a separate conversation. This is just like high level AI. If you haven't done it at all yet, you're certainly not going to be doing a big tech implementation. But if you're being told by your team, hey, we need to be doing ChatGPT, and you're like, whoa, 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 what do you mean? Learn. But the main thing you need to learn is prompt development, right? Talking to a AI bot. If you're going to spend any time learning AI, I highly recommend you spend time doing prompt development and understanding how to get what you need out of it, because the tools are being created, launched so rapidly. You In 6 months, once you've nailed down prompt development using one foundational tool to practice, then you can begin exploring other tools or have a member of your team be the subject matter expert in order to do it. But it's not a situation where AI is going to be running your entire marketing department in the next year, right? So it's going to make you smarter. It's going to make you more efficient. You need to begin learning it in order to stay ahead with the curve. But that's kind of my POV on it. And so when I think, though, about like where folks are going from a marketing perspective and where they need to be in order to improve that patient experience, we still get calls from provider groups that are not effectively using something as basic as paid media. They're not online. When folks are searching this kind of doctor near me, they're not even doing that yet. So I feel like this is two separate conversations. It's like foundational, like folks that aren't even leveraging digital appropriately yet versus those groups that have a CDP and Salesforce Marketing Cloud, or they're doing all these cool things. Their advice of what's coming next is so foundationally different from where a lot of organizations are. There's no generalization, I feel like, that can be had across the two. Unless, am I missing something, Jared? Is there something that you think applies?
You characterize that very well, and the continuum that there is between those approaches. And it's a bit myopic to not acknowledge that you're likely closer to one end of that spectrum or the other. And there's not that much middle ground on that continuum as there used to be, because those who are using it are finding it effective, and then they keep iterating. And so if it's, again, if that's a muscle you haven't developed yet, then that gap is widening, it feels like.
I completely agree. We've talked to, when I just think about like the last month, I've had talks with five separate groups that have been with the same agency partner for 5+ years. They have very little digital. They're doing a whole bunch of out of home. They do not really understand their cost per acquisition. They are so foundational. And I'm so excited to help them, right? But I also am continuously shocked that there are so many organizations out there that still exist at that level of infancy. And so the continuum is widening. And I think part of that is because of the marketing leadership background. The people that call us are always the ones that, like, a new person just got put into that role and they saw what the predecessor did over the last 10 years. And they're like, oh my, we're behind. Let's roll. Let's improve this. Right. So I think it's all a matter of the exposure that that marketing leader had had in their prior positions. If they've never done patient acquisition campaigns that are digitally minded and oriented, they might not even know it exists.
Amen. It's the reality. I like keeping that real and acknowledging that that is what's happening. Not everyone's on the same page here. And so when there's a call for, let's look at what's coming next, you know, that's why the term I've loved, or the phrase I've heard, which I love, which is AI is not a strategy.
Yes, that's perfect way to phrase it.
It's just like, I mean, fill in the blank, right? That used to be social media is not a strategy. It used to be mobile is not a strategy. So the same mindset keeps coming up of,
yes,
cool, a new thing. Whereas if you just go into it, every new thing that comes about, you're capable of learning, you're capable of figuring out to a point where you can just like develop this process of what's the business value? Is this useful for us? If not, we can keep it on the shelf. We can keep evaluating it. We don't have to do all the things. That's what gets overwhelming, is when you think you have to do everything.
I love that so much. It just is another tool in your toolbox that you can pull from whenever it's needed. And the lens at which to qualify is such a good perspective for a leader to have, because otherwise you will be pulled in such so many different directions. It's impossible. So, and the number of people, salespeople calling and emailing you on a daily basis saying this tool will fix everything for you and your marketing program will be amazing, right? That's overwhelming too. You know, I'm sure their LinkedIn inboxes are just flooded every day. So it's hard to keep up with.
Yes, does somebody have a solution for my LinkedIn inbox? Because I'd love to talk with you.
I know, it's so annoying.
Okay, so where does this all get us to? I like to, you know, think, it's easy to think what happens if this goes wrong, if we don't figure things out, if budgets don't change, if leadership styles don't change. But what if things go well? What if things go right here? What if marketers continue to be innovative, continue to figure things out? I'm typically very encouraged attending conferences, hearing sessions about, yes, some of the topics are similar from year over year over year. But a lot of times there's a lot more progress that's being made. So that's usually encouraging. So where does this all get us? If marketers keep being better at marketing, how does that help the people who we are marketing to?
I like to think of my 88-year-old grandpa, who is very digital savvy. He reads the New York Times on his laptop every day. They do online banking. I mean, they're very savvy for being in their 80s. But I do the work I do because I imagine a world where he needs to find a specialist and he can easily go online, find a solution for his care, and book an appointment easily online. And the user interface is such that somebody with that level of tech savvy can do it, right? I think that is our objective, is we're not just trying to speak to those people that are using ChatGPT themselves, right? Like, those people are going to find the solution that they need. We're talking to the people with, say, within our organization, we write to a fifth grade reading level. My grandpa's way above that. But organizationally, we write to a lower, you know, upper elementary, lower middle school writing level from a vocabulary perspective. And the user interface needs to be the same. You know, my 9-year-old needs to be able to sit down. And if I say, hey, buddy, try to find the new pediatrician online and book an appointment, it should be so easy that he should be able to do it. Because that means we're truly helping people find care. And that is what makes me get up every day. At least that's the goal of my organization.
I love that. Not only because of marketing's involvement in making that happen, but in that scenario, we all have that person in our lives. It could be ourselves, it could be a loved one, but we all have people in mind when we say, let's make healthcare easier. Let's make it easier for the clinicians providing the care, but let's also make it easier for those who are receiving the care.
Yes.
Let's have that be our North Star, for crying out loud. Like, let's just have that be a thing we talk about and incorporate more into the marketing discussion so that, yes, we're growing the business ultimately. We're growing engagement, we're growing any of the KPIs that get us there, but we're ultimately making healthcare easier. That's what gets people engaged in their health, is when it doesn't have to be so hard.
As an organization, Hedy and Hop, we actually have an internal dashboard we created that aggregates all of our client marketing campaigns. We have a goal of positively impacting 100 million patient journeys online and directly impacting 10 million appointments set over the next 5 years. And so that for us is a very literal way that we know that we're impacting people. Each one of those is a human that was able to find care because of the work that we did. And so that's an easy way. If you're trying to think of a way to be able to encourage your internal team, highly recommend find a way to turn it into something tangible. It doesn't have to be that, but something tangible where it's humans you're helping, not just internet sessions.
I was not aware of the dashboard when we started going there, the conversation. I love this so much. I can't even tell you. It's not only bold, it's possible. Fantastic.
It is.
All right.
Thank you.
Final thoughts, Jenny. Anything we haven't talked about yet? Anything you'd want to make sure the marketing listeners in our audience hear from you?
First of all, just congratulations for tuning in to a healthcare podcast. You're already ahead of the curve as far as leaning in and trying to continue your education for what needs to be done and what you can do within your role. So congratulations to that first. You're already showing that you're a continuous learner. But if you are that, find a way to give back. You know, find a way to continue helping other people within the space, because the more of us that are trying to help other people learn and grow without different, you know, incentives, right? Like, I create content and love it just because I'm an educator at my heart and I want to help other people be better. And for those of you that are tuning in, I bet a large number of you are that same thing. And so find a way to do that yourself, whether it's within your own internal team, other friends or colleagues you have within the network. Continuously share and help each other, because at the end of the day, we're not competitors. None of us are. We're all just out here trying to make a difference in the world.
What a perfect place for us to wrap up. We are out of time here, but that's the perfect place for us to put a point on all of this. I want to thank you so much for giving us this much to think about. I've had the absolute pleasure of speaking with Jenny Bristow. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Jared. Appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you heard, please spread the word. Tell your colleagues to tune in for all the awesomeness, then leave a review on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. This show is produced by Shift Forward Health, the channel for changemakers. Subscribe to Shift Forward Health on your favorite podcast app, and you'll be subscribed to our entire library of shows. See our full lineup at shiftforwardhealth.com. One subscription, all the podcasts you need, and it's all for free. And remember, we might have a lot of work to do in healthcare, but we'll get there faster together. Thanks again.